The anatomy of a demon. Not just an artha, this is a demon. So, chapter 36 from Canto 10, text 26. Hamsa instructing his followers the plan to kill Krishna. Commence the bow sacrifice on the Chaturdasi day in accordance with the relevant Vedic injunctions. Bow sacrifice. Danu. Yagya. In ritual, slaughter. In ritual slaughter. Offer the appropriate kinds of animals to the magnanimous Lord Shiva. We often hear Prabhupada say to Goddess Kali, so here's like Lord Shiva. Vishwanath writes, for my prosperity, cut up some goats. For my prosperity, cut up some goats in order to please the Lord of living entities. Jiva Goswami writes, we should not only use material means, we should use supernatural means also to lure them. The two should be brought on the occasion of a spiritual festival on the pretext of seeing wrestling matches, that's the material. Shiva was the protector of Mathura and the bow and very generous. Midhushe means unto Shiva, who gives satisfaction by bestowing boons, unquote. This is also a statement made out of fear. Sanatan Goswami writes, we should not only use material means, we should use supernatural means also to lure them. The two should be brought on the occasion of a spiritual festival on the pretext of seeing wrestling matches. And then a further commentary says, Kamsa said, quote, for my prosperity, you should behead some goats and offer them to Lord Shiva, Bhuta Rajaya, the giver of benedictions. Text 27 from chapter 36. Having thus commanded his ministers, Kamsa next called for Akrura, the most eminent of the Yadus. Kamsa knew the art of securing personal advantage, diplomacy, and thus he took Akrura's hand in his own and spoke to him as follows. Now there's some history of why Akrura is hanging out in Mathura. When when Kamsa, the son of Padmavati and so-called son of Ugrasena, because he wasn't directly the son of Ugrasena, he told that to his ministers, how what really happened. Padmavati and Drumila and that whole scene. But when he heard this voice from the sky and flipped out, that's when he made his move to take over the throne. He dethroned Ugrasena, put Vasudeva and Devaki in prison, and the Yadu dynasty personalities, because Ugrasena is of the Yadu dynasty. You know, when the Yadu dynasty was shifted to Dwarka, Ugrasena was the king in Dwarka. Krishna wasn't the king. Ugrasena was the king. So The rest of the Yadu dynasty, when Ugrasena got dethroned and so forth, you know, they did the 23 skidoo. They left town for their life, because Kamsa could do anything at any time, and they knew it. But some remained, and one of them that remained was Akura. He's of the Yadu dynasty, uncle Akura, and he did so for a reason. He knew that Krishna would appear, and he wanted to see Krishna, so he hung out. So he became, the best of ministers, because he called his other ministers, but the best, superlative, the most eminent of the Yadus. And there was a reason, you know, if Yadu goes to a Yadu, then, you know, there's trust. There isn't caution or enmity or anything. So he was the right guy. He's like, was careful, very diplomatic and calculating. It's just part of his strategy. Vishwanath writes, Kamsa was knowledgeable of Artha Shastra. Artha, in Dhamma Artha Kama Moksha, Artha is commonly translated as economic development. But more specifically, it's something that is desired. Anartha is something undesired. Artha is something desired. So how to get what you desire? Artha Shastra. He was knowledgeable. So Vishwanath says he knew all about Artha and Kama, but did not know Dharma and Moksha. Skip the Dharma part, just go for the Artha and Kama part. The demon. Jiva Goswami. Kamsa knew the conclusions, or Tantra. It's a nice definition of Tantra. I'm used to hearing the word Tantra used as procedures. There's sections of the Vedas that are called Tantra, that it describes how to, procedures for deity worship, observing festivals, you know, everything and everything. Tantra. But here's conclusions about Artha, material benefits, or the scriptures concerning them, but not scriptures about Dharma. Like, you know, he received Narada so nicely, but it wasn't Dharma. It was Artha. Akura was the most trustworthy of the Yadus, Yadu Pungavam. Therefore, he was suitable to go, because of the trust that was invested in Akura by the Yadus and the Yadu group over there in Braja. So it was the right choice. He called him, not because he was Kamsa's man, but because Akura could deliberate on matters skillfully. He held Akura's hand to show affection and to make sure that he would not tell others what he would say. He spoke to him among his own people, not others. So there were some other people, but his trusted people, and that was the assembly. Ha! Means he spoke clearly. And a final commentary. Kamsa knew about Artha Shastra, the Sanskrit of the verses Artha Tantra Gya, the art of securing personal interest, because that's Artha. Materialists consider personal interest in the material plane. And Kama, sense gratification, but Kamsa knew nothing about Dharma and Moksha, religion and liberation. So he was avidya, like Isha Upanishad, vidyam cha yas, we should know the difference between the two. And he was very accomplished in avidya. Text 28. My dear Akrura. And the Sanskrit is double. Bho. Bho. It's commented on. He says it twice. My dear Akrura. My dear Akrura. Come on, what's up? But most charitable one, please do me a friendly favor. Out of respect. Among the Bhojas and Vrishnis, there is no one else as kind to us as you. Vishwanath writes, in order to please me, undertake this action, easy for a friend to do. Jiva Goswami writes, Kamsa repeats bho, bho, out of respect, or buttering him up. Oh, best of the generous, dana pate, you must do something for my benefit. You should do what is worthy of a friend. Akrura, oh, king of the Bhojas, why do you send me? Answer, you are the order barrier among the Adus. I respect you. And another commentary, Kamsa said, to satisfy me, Akrura, please do this as an act of friendship. Maitram, we've been hearing this term, you know, several times now. Maitra is another word for friend. There's different shades of meaning, but as a friend. It's a text 29. Gentle Akrura. Saumya. Gentle Akrura. You always carry out your duties soberly, and therefore I am depending on you. Just as powerful Indra took shelter of Vishnu to achieve his goals. You're like Vishnu and I'm like Indra. So you're up there and I'm down here. That's, you know, his language at least. I have come to you, so Vishwanath, I have come to you because you can execute the task most perfectly. Jiva Goswami writes, oh, peaceful Akrura, he addresses him to encourage him. I take shelter of you since you are my friend and you are peaceful. Akrura, for what purpose do you take shelter of me? Answer, I take shelter to accomplish an important task. But you are capable of doing everything yourself. Why do you need me? Answer, that is true. But even if I am capable, the work will succeed with assistance. He gives an example. Though Indra was capable, Vibhu, he took shelter of Vishnu to achieve his goals. He indicates that Vishnu is inferior to Indra since he hates Vishnu. Duplicity personified. Another commentary. Kamsa said, I have come to you because among my relations you can execute the task most perfectly. And then text 30. Please go to Nanda's village, just like it reminds me of Ravana asking what's his name? Who became the golden deer? Maricha. It was, you know, sweet, please. And then it was like, if you don't, I'm going to kill you. Diplomacy. Please go to Nanda's village where the two sons of Anakundunduvi are living. Now, there was this discussion about what's the derivative or the meaning of this name, Adikundundavi, and I spent some time. And I couldn't find an answer. There's a meaning for Adikundundavi, but it's just another name of Vasudev. And how that stuck to him, I couldn't find an answer. So don't ask me that same question again. So he's just accepting what Narada said. That is, Vasudeva and Devaki are the two sons of Vasudev. He doesn't offer an explanation to Akrura. He just states it. Because previously, that wasn't the idea. But where the two sons of Anakundundubi are living, and without delay, bring them here on this chariot. Purport. This is the BBT purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti gives the following interesting note. Quote, when Kamsa said, with this chariot, Ratena, he pointed with his index finger to a brand new, attractive chariot. Kamsa thought that since Akrura was innocent by nature, when he saw this fine, new vehicle, he would naturally want to drive it and quickly bring the two boys back. But the actual reason Akrura went on a new chariot was that it would have been clearly inappropriate for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to mount a chariot that had already been enjoyed by the wicked Kamsa. Unquote. That's Vishwanath. There's other commentary I've read that says, Apnavan Manyate Jagat, that he was thinking, you know, he's appealing to him. He's not like threatening him. He's appealing to him. So he's thinking like himself, an enjoyer, sense enjoyer. And a sense enjoyer would, wow, this is really an honor. Here, like, won the lottery. And here's like this super mobile or conveyance. So he would entice him to fulfill his request. Vishwanath, pointing with his finger at the new chariot, Kamsa said, seeing the new astonishing chariot, the young boys will readily sit in it. Akrura took the new chariot, thinking that it would be unsuitable to bring the Lord in something used previously by Kamsa. Jiva Goswami writes, and this is all we're going to cover this morning. Having encouraged Akrura, Kamsa states the mission. They are in Vraja and have not fled elsewhere. Bring them in this chariot, Anena, newly constructed and profusely ornamented. Kamsa gave his own chariot to show special favor to him. Seeing the new, beautiful chariot, the two children will be happy to mount it by their own, without delay. Actually, it was the will of the Lord that nice arrangements were made for his welcome to Mathura. I've been spending some time because of the Atlanta Temple's request. Well, it's the congregation on the 4th, the day after Balaram's appearance, say Prabhupada's appearance, excuse me, that the departure from Jaladuta, departure on the Jaladuta from Calcutta. That's the calendar date, the lunar calendar date. And just reading this, the passage that the cabin that Prabhupada was provided on the Jaladuta was right next to the captain's cabin, and it was a VIP cabin. You know, the rest of where everybody stayed was like, you know, barracks. It was the sailors, and the sailors didn't have something, you know, well-furnished and everything. Then the room that Prabhupada, that little cabin for the 36-day journey or 38-day journey was, you know, really first class. Now, normally it's a cargo ship, so there's not passenger accommodation, but it was arranged. It just so happened, providential arrangement, that there wasn't somebody occupying that. Although later, Prabhupada describes that he had a roommate or, you know, somebody else that was sharing that space with him during part of the journey. Doesn't give the detail. But when he was, when there was sickness due to a rough sea, the other person was also experiencing. And in his journal, this is another sharing, the journal begins before after he got this letter and got the permission from, Sumati Maharaji reluctantly to give Prabhupada passage. So it begins way over in Bombay and then sequences. But when, during that, and there was some, just a little practical thing. I mean, it's just a note to himself. You know, how many rupees he spent for riding a tram or a bus and, you know, what he did. Real short. But when he got to this, intense seasickness where the first stroke took place, it's just, a line in the page that goes like that. He was so, put something. We don't even know if it happened this, he put something the same day, but several days it was just a line like this. Or, you know, like this. It was really severe. Really severe. But he kept going. And they had a Janmashtami festival on the boat. With the sailors hearing and the captain hearing and Prabhupada speaking. And his solace was Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we're getting solace from Srimad Bhagavatam. I know another group of devotees, well, I'll be specific, because I had to reach out to Rabindra Sarup Prabhu for something else, for being a speaker at the Festival of the Holy Name. So he did it remotely, and it was really nice. But I found out from his secretary, Shraddhar, that every day they're just reading from Krishna book during the whole pandemic thing. You know, this, like we're doing. Some people, and then people remote, and people that are living upstate New York or whatever. You know, people connected to Ravindra, they're just reading Krishna book. Solace. There's a certain, I mean, not only our acharyas speak about it and write about it, the sweetness of Krishna's associates and their love for him, there's also a sweetness just hearing. I was thinking as about to begin this morning's discussion, there's a sweetness about what we're doing. I mean, the world around us is the world around us, and morning and evening and morning and evening and morning and evening, it's such a sweet thing that one is looking forward to it. And then, you know, at all kinds of different times of the day, just the some particular feature that was very sweet and attractive and appealing. It's just the forgetfulness of Krishna moves into remembrance of Krishna in a very natural way. Our scriptures, Prabhupada was, it speaks like this. Our scriptures don't speak simply, you know, philanthropy and altruism and be kind and love one another. I mean, it's not that it doesn't say that, but our scripture and our teachings begin with, who are you? It's pretty nice place to begin, Bhagavad Gita. And then, who are you connected with the bigger picture of who are you? You're part of something much bigger than you. You're part of the creation, and the creation is part of, so matter and spirit are all part of the source. And so the knowledge goes further. Again, mentioning something that we talked about briefly yesterday evening, was a good question. In chapter 13, verses 8 through 12, Bhagavad Gita, there are two metaphors. One is specifically citing what Prabhupada says. The items of knowledge, Prabhupada writes in the purport, it's like a staircase, and there's step one, step two, etc. It goes to the top, and the topmost knowledge is to know Krishna. And then another metaphor that is like a chandelier metaphor is, and that's, there's like the light fixture that's nice, but it won't work unless the thing is fastened to the ceiling. So what, or that over there, that light fixture is hanging from a chain. So the light fixture is useless without it being suspended and of course connected to the power hose. So what's knowledge? It's the practical byproduct or fruit of the pinnacle or the top of the chandelier. The Mai Chananya Yogina Bhaktir Avyabhichari. The Avyabhichari Bhakti is, that's it. That's knowledge. That's the pinnacle of the steps of knowledge. And then there's things that are downstream from that. They get that connection with Krishna's devotional service undivided. It's connection with the spiritual master, Acharya Upasana. And then comes the other items of knowledge, the chandelier. So with our scripture, the starting point is, who are we? But the purpose of who are we isn't just, you know, aham brahmasmi. It's to connect with Krishna. The purpose of everything is to connect with Krishna. And so it's advised before going to 10th canto, one reads the other cantos. And we're in 10th canto for simply because when the pandemic started, that's where, you know, I was in Chicago and they're reading from the the morning class was the 10th canto, so that's why we're doing what we're doing. But it also helps. That's the goal. And do I really want to know who I am? Is that important to me? Like, what's important to me? Well, happiness is important to me. And how do I get happiness? Austerities and penances? That doesn't look like happiness. Anyway, so there's a whole bunch of teachings, but all those steps of teachings or items of knowledge or qualities, because that's what the items of knowledge are in that set of verses from chapter 13. Knowledge is qualities. Or from this one quality comes all other qualities. So we're getting this sweetness dose to help us be attracted to reach the goal. It's a nice goal. And the more we can understand what it looks like, feels like, it's so and so forth. And then here we're looking at the contrast, like divine and demoniac chapter. Here he is, Kamsa. I mean, you know, offer some goats, cut the throat of some goats to please Lord Shiva. You know, and that's a religious, what to speak of people that are irreligious. And that's the atmosphere where we are. Driving back and forth to these programs, there's, you know, getting to see that what's Detroit like out there. You know, different businesses and different kinds of homes and different this's and that's. But every time, it's just one of the things that I've been doing, thinking, what a demoniac culture we're in. Those drive-in places where they're selling this and that, the lines are so long. They're so patient. The lines are so long. Some places are not so long. But most of them, they're long. And some of them are just like, I don't know, 50 cars lined up to get a slaughtered animal. You know, that's happiness. Sitting in your car, waiting to get a slaughtered animal. Misdirected civilization. Who are you? Forget it. That's not happiness. It's a challenge. So, yeah, one can just say, well, Manushinam Sahasreshu Kastya Jatati. There's not too many people that wants to know who they are. And of people that want to know who they are, very few want to know Krishna. And what to speak of those that come to know Krishna. And Krishna is everything. You know, that's, no thank you. I want a burger. So, but the people that's okay. That's they're separated from that. It's a journey. Self-realization is a journey, and you know, our primary means of moving forward on that path is sound. The sound of the name, the sound of the scriptures, instructions that coming from the perfect person, Krishna, or the persons who have taken shelter of the perfect person, Shukadev Goswami and our acharyas, and that's the path. And it's really sweet. At the same time, we're covered and conditioned and distracted, and there's illusion, and you know, we don't really know that we're not the body. We say yes to check the box, I'm not the body, but we don't. How deep is that realization? How deep is the satisfaction that comes from that realization? Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kangsati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate prana. We come to devotional service when all that's there. So what are we doing? Anyway, it's the preliminary stage. We're getting a lot of mercy. And the lot of mercy is very sweet amidst all the distractions and the atmosphere that's surcharged with opposition at whatever stage of life. People get really serious when there's crisis. 9/11 happened, everyone got really religious. Or a number of devotees wrote to me after Bhakti Trumaraj's departure, I chanted the best rounds, you know, time is short, I got to get serious. And then time passes and that urgency fades and, you know, we're all familiar with. So how do you stay on that edge? How do you stay? Like that was one of the questions. They like stay with a sense of meaningfulness and not become complacent and it becomes mechanical. Well, one way is get another kick in the seat of the pants and you get really serious for a while again. That's one option. Krishna can just kick you. That's an option. But then, you know, there's better options. Why put Krishna through that trouble of having to kick you? Like we heard what he, you know, the one description is he kicked Arishtasura 18 times. And how many times did he kick Kaliya? You know, how many times do we have to get kicked? So there must be better options. I mean, that's an option. But to, you know, introspection and be, you can't be lazy to make spiritual progress. You can't be lazy. You have to be thoughtful. And not just because I don't like discomfort. But, you know, that's material. What's beyond I don't like discomfort? What about, you know, another happiness that says, I know who I am and my relationship with Christ. So there's levels of knowledge. There's levels of connectivity with Krishna. And wherever we are, we should take a look at the long-term goal and consider what's a step that I can take towards that long-term goal, and then don't be lazy or complacent or mechanical. Take a bhakti step and stay with the bhakti principle as you make that bhakti step and keep going, keep going, keep going in good association with good sound vibration because the nourishing element is sound. So we've got some nice sound, this Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the sound part. Then there's the internal part. Don't be lazy. Don't be complacent. Don't get really, you know, get comfortable so I can like, now I'm comfortable. Don't aspire for that. I mean, whether it comes or it doesn't come, if you're comfortable or uncomfortable, what's the higher purpose? That's required. Adau Shraddha. And then nurture that. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. 8:15. Be patient. If somebody will. What? Wow, you unentangled the wire. That was really good of you.
This is not related directly, at least, but this is something I've been thinking about for a few months. And I think I'll share some of my thoughts on it and then ask a question. So the topic is about stress.
What do you mean?
So stress is something we hear that is a cause, probably a primary cause of disease.
Yes.
And so I've heard Prabhupada say that, you know, there are only two reasons why we get sick. One is that we eat something wrong, or the other is stress. And something I've heard yourself say is most stress comes from desires. So I don't remember the context. It was like a quote.
Okay.
Something that we hear very regularly in today's day and age is how yoga and meditation is meant to help reduce stress, make us more peaceful, things like that. So I was recently thinking more about what does the Shastra really say, if anything, directly about stress. Now, I know that, you know, if we understand that Krishna is the controller and we have faith and, you know, along those lines, then it helps us reduce stress. And in one sense, our whole bhakti process is, you know, meditation, like japa meditation. And it will help us reduce stress to know who we are, like self-realization. But I was really wondering if there's something in Shastra that, you know, the word stress is like directly addressed. I don't know.
I'm not a Sanskrit scholar. And I don't know what the Sanskrit equivalent is for stress, but I'm sure there is multiple, because it's an emotion, and I'm sure there's multiple ways of describing stress, and there's different Sanskrit words for it. I can ask a Sanskrit scholar and report back to you. But the principle is, as you stated, disconnect from Krishna. And what do you get? You get illusion. An illusion has different modes of nature, and stress is in the lower realm of the modes of nature. Then, you know, there's a mode of goodness. It doesn't mean the mode of goodness is free from stress, but it's, you know, it's lighter and manageable, and, you know, you can, you know, go for higher purposes because there's a higher purpose and it's more manageable. And that's stress management. Stress management isn't Vaikuntha. Stress management is mode of goodness, moving towards mode of goodness. And there may be some idea that it's good to have an idea of God and, you know, some godliness to your life, and that helps stress management, kind of like an addiction problem. The addiction people, the 12 step, and God's up at the top. You can't be successful in detox without God. The people that teach it, that they learned it. And whatever your faith in God is, you know, do it, because it'll help you detox or overcome your addiction, whatever it is. This, that, the other. They have so many addictions. And knowing that you have an addiction, It's stressful, and you have no control, and so that's stressful. So it's, you know, the stress, the root is not a disconnect with Krishna. So I'm the enjoyer, and I'm not enjoying. I'm the controller, and I'm not in control. So I gotta, like, get control, but I can't get control, so it's stressful. Things are going, you know, one of the things that feeds stress is the illusion of things are going well. it's a sucker punch. Mm. You know, it's just inviting one to the, you know, the journey in illusion. Happiness in the mode of goodness is not what happiness is. It's a delusion. So that's the root, and the solution is, you know, so let's go to the residents of Vrindavan. Do they experience stress? You bet. But it's not, doesn't make them sick. It makes them feel more intensely their shelter in Krishna. And guess what? Krishna's always there. Krishna's his well-wisher of his devotees. And he takes care of the situation. And they don't, you know, it's not like stress relief. But it's a whole other paradigm. So this is a perverted reflection of that. That's the root cause, is disconnect with Krishna. Turn our attention away from Krishna. So your specific question is, is there terminology in Sanskrit or in the Vedas that deals with stress? There must be. And I'll ask somebody who will probably give me a swift answer, and I'll just forward it over to you. There's some people that I go, different people that I go to for questions like that. And I don't go to the same one all the time, because it'd be like a nuisance. Okay?
Thank you, Mark.
Anyone else over here? No. Okay. Yes.
Marge, I have a question related to yesterday's morning class. And I was wondering, where do you put the line between over-planning and, like, planning properly?
Over-playing?
Over-planning.
Over-playing.
Planning.
Over-planning. Oh. Over-planning. And planning.
Yeah.
Well, a real simple litmus test is, are you remembering Krishna or forgetting him? And over-planning is when you forget Krishna. You're at the center, and, you know, Krishna is not in the picture. That's over-planning. And planning should be principle-based, because details are always change. But if you stay principle-based, that is, Krishna is to be pleased, that's like the core principle, that's the bhakti principle, then over-planning could mean, besides I'm forgetting the Krishna is to be pleased, I get so involved with the details of the plan, the principle is lost. And then when the picture changes, because the picture always changes, you know, my understanding of what's out there and what's out there changes, both perception and, you know, the configuration of duality out there. They both are always changing. So you have to, you know, reconsider. That's over-planning. So keep it simple. Planning, stay principle-based, and keep it simple. And then refine details as you go along, so that you don't get obsessive about the detail and, you know, the fruitive, what's in it for me purpose of the plan. So beware of the fruitive. That's what's distracting from Krishna. What's in it for me? And then it becomes complicated. Over planning.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Let's go online for a bit.
This first question is from Archana Dattar Mataji, and she asks, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter Vaikuntha, verse 110, it says, "The Lord of Vaikuntha became Krishna. Lakshmi in Dara became Radhika in Chandravali." Could you please explain this, Guru Maharaj?
How about I take the text that you're referring to and we discuss it tomorrow. That's it for online. Anything else in the room over here?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is about Putana that you were describing on the other day, like how she went to Goloka because she served Krishna as well as she wore a Vaishnavi dress. So I was wondering, like, how important is this Vaishnavi dress? Because we don't wear it all the time. We don't get a chance to wear it all the time, like going to work or, you know, any other place. So I was wondering, like, how important is this?
It's not so important. I mean, we should do what's pleasing to Krishna. That's important. And for certain services, let's say deity worship, or that which is connected to deity worship, or when we're in the company of devotees, we want to remind of the devotees of Krishna. So when we can, when it's not inappropriate, we like to remind the devotees of Krishna. But even that, we can remind Krishna, others of Krishna, just by who we are, our character and our demeanor and our Vaishnava qualities. That's, certainly with the public, when we're at work or this or that, going into public places, it's our character that speaks more than how we dress. But the goal is within ourselves to remember Krishna and to remind others of Krishna and thereby please Krishna. And you don't need something outside to do that. But when it's inside, then you want to do that when it's appropriate, as opposed to when it might not be appropriate. When I traveled in China, I was advised, don't even put a dhoti in your suitcase. Because sometimes they do a security check with your luggage, and if they find a dhoti, So, you have to be practical. So at workplace, but some people are just fine. Some people are just fine going to the workplace wearing tilak, etc. Vaishnav dress or Vaishnavi dress. But then you can have something that's modest and it's not a sari when you're in the workplace. And okay? Thank you. Your business is to help people remember Krishna. And to remember Krishna yourself. Yeah.
Maharaj, we hear this number 18 repeated times, like Krishna kicking Aristasura 18 times.
And you hear what many times?
18 number.
The number 18.
Yeah. It says
we hear 16 a lot too.
I was trying to understand if there is any specific.
I'm not a numerologist. No idea.
The next question is from Divyambara Devidasi Mataji, and she asks. Oh, okay. Never mind. It's just it's just a thank you.
Okay. Next. That's it. In the room, or we're done. Back here. Do you have something about 18? You're a numerologist?
No, sorry. This is something else, not a related topic, but it's something I've been thinking about. And as I think there's no real question. It's maybe just what your thoughts are on it. But what I've been thinking about is embracing technology and how technology is changing so rapidly. Something I think about very often, I mean, I'm not even that old, but I actually feel overwhelmed by the way technology is changing, and there's so many things to keep up with and learn. And I often think about, like, my parents, for example, older
generation,
and it must be so hard for them. My father is constantly asking me to help him with certain things, and I have to, like, assure him. Sometimes I assure him that it's okay that you don't know this and that you don't have to figure it out. Just ask somebody else. You know, it's like, how long are you going to spend in your life figuring something new out, which is probably going to change? But I often feel really sorry, actually, for, like, the older generation, how they even function in society today sometimes. And I guess I was wondering if you have thoughts on this, and even how you've learned to embrace things like, you know, different ways to communicate, for example.
I guess I ask other people to do it for me. And they're happy to have some service like that. And I don't have to know. I mean, that's me. You're asking personal. That's. I don't have to know how this works, that works. I don't even understand the principle of it, actually, to be honest. What to speak of the details of how it works, what to speak of how it's changing. I have, like, you know, a 30,000 feet bird's eye view of what's going on down there. But I don't really understand what's going on down there. That's me. Mm-hmm. But I do know that people, there's a lot of people doing it. And so it's important, because that's how to connect with people, because that, you know, they're not, without going into details, the dinosaur methods of communication just, and then different people have different, like, you know, a common, somebody knows Instagram. And, you know, you're in communication with them through Instagram. They don't even use that one and that one and that one. But so you want to know? That's how I don't have exactly an allergy to technology. But I don't have an appetite for it either. I understand it has its utility. And, you know, I learned different things about how it works. You know, Twitter, and it depends, like, how many times, and retweets, and, you know, I don't really understand all that. But there are people that understand all that. And so they, you know, I don't know how to tweet. Tweet.
There's definitely someone doing that on your behalf, Maharaj.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are certain people in the world that they know a lot about it. There's some people that use it all the time in big positions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, They're ISKCON devotee leaders that know a lot about that, and they personally, anyway, but I have a different priority. I really like spending time with Srimad Bhagavatam. And probably should be doing some other things, but so. Anything else? One more online, okay.
This one is from Rukmavati Devidasi Mataji, and she asks, Guru Maharaj, it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that demons are also given liberation due to the all-merciful nature of the Lord. So, is that understanding correct that they are not given personal association with the Lord and just the Brahman effulgence?
Yes. There's exception like Putana because she did a little mini service, but that's the exception. Otherwise it's Sayuja. Okay. You have something.
Just one question. On the planet where Narsinghadeva resides, so the associates, they're also in the same form, or?
I don't know.
Okay.
Prabhupada ki jai.